My name is Dr. Annette Hagen, and I'm a curator of rare books, and I have curated this exhibition, which we've called Plague, and it showcases 8 contagious diseases which had epidemic outbreaks at some stage in Scotland, and it showcases the cultural and social responses by society to these epidemics. So we're standing at the entrance to the exhibition, and we're looking down towards the end as if we're looking down an old Edinburgh close with dark high walls enclosing the space in the middle. The 2 key items in our exhibition are 1 manuscript and 1 printed book, and the manuscript was compiled by an Edinburgh merchant called George Bannatyne, and it contains about 400 texts, most of which are poems by Scots markers, and most of which we wouldn't actually have if it was not for this manuscript. Now, he didn't actually write them, he just copied them out, and he finished his manuscript in 1568, and then, because the plague was raging in Edinburgh, he left the city, moved off to his countryside, saved his skin, and thankfully saved the manuscript for the nation. And the printed book is the only surviving copy of the first medical book printed in Scotland, 1568, same date as the Bannatyne manuscript. It was written by Gilbert Skene, who was professor of medicine in Aberdeen, and it's called A Brief Description of the Pest, so of the pestilence, the plague. And the interesting thing is it's written in Scots, so that people could read it themselves rather than Latin, could read it to other people. It talks a lot about symptoms, about treatments, about diagnosis. It doesn't have anything new to offer. They didn't actually have any huge medical knowledge, so it regurgitates what was said by the old Greek physicians. Our first case here gives the historical accounts from Europe, just to set the context for the diseases which didn't just hit Scotland, obviously. All the exhibits in it are from the 16th century, and another couple of very poignant items in here is a manuscript by Walter Bower, the Abbot of Inchcombe, and a copy of Hector Boece's Scottish Chronicle in Scots translation, and both of them mention the fact that the plague of 1349 wiped out a third of the Scottish population. Leprosy never had any epidemic outbreaks in Scotland, but it did occur time and again. We do actually have a book with a timeline of occurrences of leprosy in Britain. One of the most gruesome objects in the whole exhibition here is actually a hand of a leprosy sufferer, and the fingers have already fouled off. We also have a replica of a leper clapper in there. Lepers had to be put outside town walls, town boundaries, into colonies. Liberton in Edinburgh, for instance, was leper town, and they used these clappers to warn people if they came too close so they wouldn't be infected. The smallpox had absolutely devastating effects in Scotland. It came in different epidemics, mostly in the 18th century, and also before in the 1720s, 40s, 60s, 80s, and carried away huge numbers of the population. And what we're showcasing here is a piece of skin with smallpox on it. For all I can tell, it could be a piece of leather. We have one very poignant letter from the National Records here, and it talks about a small village near Rannoch. The letter is from 1780. It tells about the children of the village, 14 of them, all of who got the smallpox. 8 of them died. The rest were left blind, and the parents were too poor to afford inoculation. The cholera was another huge killer, not just in Scotland, right across Europe. There were 3 major outbreaks, 1832, 1848, and 1856, and they knew pretty soon that it was contaminated water that caused the cholera, but everybody got infected at the same wells. And we do have death statistics of Paisley, Pollock Shaws, Glasgow, and so on, exhibited in a book here. Another huge epidemic killer in Scotland, as elsewhere in Europe, was TB, tuberculosis, or consumption, as it was known as. We have one nice gruesome item in here. It's a piece of lung which was infected by TB. We also have an image of a boy who had TB and was left with arthritis of the neck as a result. So even if you survived it, your bone structure could be affected. And there was a different kind of TB known as scrofula, or also as the king's evil, and that affected the lymph glands. I'm not entirely sure if it was that contagious, but there is a book in the exhibition whose frontispiece shows King Charles II putting his hands on scrofula sufferer, because the idea was that through God's grace, as the king was God's anointed, he could actually heal scrofula sufferers. That's why disease is also called the king's evil, and there are figures that he touched about 92,000 people. How many of them were healed, I don't know. We also have a case showcasing influenza or the flu. We have some death statistics of the 1918 flu outbreak in Scotland from a command paper, which is a UK government publication. And you may know that the flu epidemic, or pandemic really, of 1918-19 carried away more people than the actual First World War. One case has information about typhus and typhoid. Typhus being transmitted by the body louse, and typhoid by contaminated food and drink, so they are different diseases. Again, we've got a piece of intestine in typhoid fever, very poignantly a fever chart of a 19-year-old boy, and you can see very clearly where the fever peaks four times at 40 degrees Celsius or 104 Fahrenheit, and the last time he died of it. The syphilis case is a bit of a freak show, can't put it any other way. We've got a wet specimen of a syphilitic nose. If you didn't know it was a nose, it would be very difficult to determine this. There's not much left of it, to put it that way. We have illustrations of symptoms of tertiary syphilis, growth and boils, and it's not very pleasant to look at all. And at the bottom there is a syphilitic skull from the College of Surgeons, which lacks the lower jaw, not because it's fallen off, but because the person had syphilis and syphilis erodes bone structure. So now we come to the actual cultural history of responses, which is the real theme of the exhibition. And the most important response was always by government. The Great Plague of London of 1665 never came to Scotland. The last outbreak was in 1660. And I think it's got a lot to do with the fact that government acted in time. So we have two or three acts here by the Privy Council which prohibit trade with infected countries. So with London and England, first of all, but also with Ostend and the Netherlands. And then a year later, there was another act to say, okay, the plague has gone away in these countries, but we will still impose a 40-day quarantine because, as they say in the actual act, the contagion still lurks in balls of wool and what have you. And as I said, acts like these actually prevented the plague from coming to Scotland. Then we have some more 19th century publications. Boards of health were established, sanitary associations and so on, giving advice to the masses of how to deal with outbreaks of cholera, for instance. The case with personal responses is probably one of the most poignant. And we have a really harrowing letter from a woman who describes her son's smallpox symptoms. So the son has gone blind as a result, and he's blind because some kind of scum has developed over his eyes and they've kind of glued together, and she's trying to get a doctor and was unable to, and she tried to open his eyes with her tongue. Just imagine that, the desperation of these people. And then we've got another letter of 1832 during the big cholera outbreak. And it's by a man from Paisley who writes to his brother in Kilmarnock, and he says that the cholera is within a few doors of us. It's come to the same stairhead, basically. Some members of the family have already died, and I met the other ones yesterday. So the fear is absolutely palpable. The religion case is quite varied, even though you might not think so. We have quite a lot of sermons, and most of the ones I found actually referred to the cholera epidemic of 1832. There's a sermon in Gaelic as well. But apart from the cholera, there was obviously huge concern about the plague, because right until the end of the 19th century, the common belief was that all epidemic outbreaks of diseases, in particular plague, were God's judgment. So you had to try and appease God. There's one proclamation from 1665 for a public fast in the whole kingdom of Scotland, and it was printed and put out in marketplaces so that people could read it or have it read to them, and nobody could say, oh, but I didn't know about it. It really had to be nationwide. And the case about responses by folklore and folk medicine, we focus on in particular on medical healing plants. Actually got two dried specimens from the botanical gardens, one of butterbur and one of snakeweed, both of which have long since been held to be effective against the plague. Now, when we say effective, we always mean against symptoms, because they didn't know what caused it. They couldn't heal it, but they could alleviate fevers, they could alleviate pain and stuff like that. Apart from plants, the other folk medicine, folklore aspect concerns wells, holy wells, cold springs, hot springs, so charms which had to be dipped into the holy water and then carried around the neck for protection, and there is, for instance, a stone cup with which you could scoop out the water and drink it. And we still take to the waters. There was something to it. The minerals do help against particular symptoms. One of my favourite pieces in the exhibition is a stuffed black rat, which we actually had commissioned by a taxidermist because we couldn't borrow one. It's standing on its hind legs, looks like it's growling, but really, it's got a smile on its face.